You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Now, on top of this, let's talk about AirAsia because, well, quite frankly, AirAsia is a large airline. And this one is, I'm not going to lie, it's amusing, but it's also deeply sad and depressing at the same time. Now, AirAsia got hit with a ransomware attack, and we don't know all the details, but here's what happened. The criminals stole information about AirAsia's staff and their passengers, and then the ransomware gang told the world that AirAsia's IT infrastructure was so chaotic, poorly secured, and downright irritating that they refused to repeat the attack, meaning it is so easy to break into you. You're a hot mess. Let's let other more amateur, ransomware gangs take a shot at you. And that should be terrifying to basically anybody that flies AirAsia. If you're flying AirAsia and their IT infrastructure is this bad to the point where the ransomware gangs are like, I could teach a third grade class how to break into this. I'm not even going to try anymore. It's too easy. I hope their airline maintenance infrastructure isn't nearly as chaotic, poorly secured, and downright irritating as their IT and ticketing system. And God forbid they lose you in this system. Here we are. Now we have to talk about Chinese state-backed hackers. This is actually an interesting one, and we're going to be talking about them more shortly, but this is a quick hit. State-backed Chinese hackers have launched a spear phishing campaign to deliver custom malware stored in Google Drive to government research and academic organizations worldwide. Now, the attacks have been observed between March and October of this year, and researchers attributed this to a cyber espionage group out of China, sponsored by China, known as Mustang Panda. They're also known as Bronze President, and also TA416. And according to Trend Micro researchers, the threat group targeted mostly organizations in Australia, Japan, Taiwan, Myanmar, and the Philippines. Chinese hackers have been rather prolific lately, although interestingly enough, and we'll talk about this in our deep dive segment, I think they've got bigger fish to fry at the moment as that country is kind of melting down. We might see revolution. We're going to talk about that soon, so stick around. And finally, and we actually have a few different finalies for you because we got some big things to talk about here. The first one is Common Spirit Health, and this is a big heads up for any of my listeners in the United States. This probably affects you, and I know that I've got radio affiliates in multiple markets in the States here. So Common Spirit Health was hit by a cyber attack on October 3rd. That forced that health company to take basically their computer systems offline, and they shortly learned, obviously of this incident. Now, it remains unclear whether patient information was compromised. Patients basically have reported the impacts of cyber attack on their health care and treatments. And so we're not sure right now what's going on with this. There has not been a full statement. I went back and looked because I reported on this a couple weeks ago. But Common Spirit, and here's where this gets me, is a nonprofit health system based out of Chicago. That's my home radio market. It's, that's the area I live in. But they operate 140 hospitals and more than 1,000 care sites across 21 states in the United States. In 2019, Common Spirit treated 20 million patients, according to their website. Their website, Dignity Health International, which is part of the Common Spirit family. So this tells us a couple of different things. That number's before the pandemic. They obviously have treated a ton more people since then, but also because they also own something called Dignity Health International, this is going to be a massive supply chain breach because all of these 1,000 sites and 140 hospitals across 21 states are probably not called Common Spirit. It might be called your local healthcare, whatever, that you've known for years and years as they absorb these names. So this is a huge, huge problem. We are going to be seeing this for months. You know, I'll keep you up to date on this. But if I see anything Common Spirit, it's going to be, it's going to be quite some time. And another finally we have for you, and I mentioned this earlier, is we've got to talk about China, because their state-sponsored hackers have just created a major, major problem. Here's what's going on. A suspected Chinese state-sponsored actor breached a digital certificate authority as well as government and defense agencies located in different countries across Asia as part of an ongoing campaign since at least March of this year. Now, researchers at Symantec linked the attacks to the adversarial group that goes by the name Billbug, citing basically the use of tools previously attributed to this actor. The activity appears to be driven by espionage and data theft, although no data is said to have been stolen to date, although obviously the researchers at Symantec are going to be limited in that from what they found. Now, Bilbug is also known as Bronze Elgin, Lotus Blossom, Lotus Panda, Spring Dragon, and Thrip. It is considered an APT, or Advanced Persistent Threat Group, and it is believed to operate on behalf of Chinese and Chinese government interests. Primary targets include government and military organizations and installations across Southeast Asia. Now, attacks basically were mounted by this adversary in 2019, and they involved the use of backdoors, various different platforms, and intrusions were observed in Hong Kong, Macau, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Vietnam. Now, both of the core softwares they use are designed to grant persistent remote access to your network, even though they're known to employ information stealers as well. And so obviously this is a huge problem, and they are not alone. We see these kinds of things constantly. We also know that Chinese intelligence years ago broke into the White House and got into the email system and all of that. So this is a huge problem that we see worldwide. China continues to do this. But like I said, they're probably distracted right now, and that's a good thing for the rest of us. Obviously, a bad thing internal to China. Although the Chinese people are apparently yearning to be free. Again, stick around for that deep dive. You're not going to want to miss this because we have some culpability there as well. And another finally we've got for you is the 2020 election. We've got a news update, and this is as unpolitical as I can make it here. But it's important to understand these things, as again we're talking about data breaches and just trying to keep it honest. Here's what happened in the 2020 election recently. A Pennsylvania judge has recommended that the state's high court impose civil contempt penalties against a Republican-majority county government that this past summer secretly allowed a third party to copy data from voting machines used in the 2020 election. Obviously, that 2020 election featured then-President Donald Trump and challenger Joe Biden. The results of that, obviously, we now have President Biden, and here we are. Commonwealth Court President Judge Renee Cohn Jubilee-Rears, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, her 77-page report issued late Friday, about 2 weeks ago, said that the July inspection and copying of computer data from machines rented by Fulton County was a willful violation of a court order designed to prevent evidence from being spoiled. She recommended that the justices find that the county, based on the actions of Republican commissioners Stuart Ulsh and Randy Bunch, quote, engaged in vexatious, obdurate, and bad faith conduct, end quote, in their lawsuit against the Department of State over whether a 2021 inspection by another outside group meant the machines could no longer be used. Judge Cohn, let's just say the judge, because I'm not going to pronounce that last name again, who is also an elected Republican, interestingly enough, recommended that the county be ordered to pay some of the state's legal fees that the Dominion Voting Systems Inc. machines in question be turned over to a third party for safekeeping at the county's expense. And I have been over these kinds of things left and right objectively. I sat through Mike Lindell, aka the MyPillow guys, cyber symposium from start to finish. I've been looking at these kinds of things, and I have yet to find any evidence that would hold up in court. Understand, I've written articles on this talking about the chain of custody and what it would take to actually look objectively at a machine that you suspect, with malfeasance, having one side or the other. I don't care if you're Republican or Democrat. If you get your hands on this information and nobody else does, it has the ability to be altered or tampered or worse, manipulated. That's why it doesn't hold up in court. We have to have good chains of custody. So I'll keep you informed on that. But obviously, that's a huge thing. And another finally we've got, and I think we've got like two more left because there have been some major breaches in the last couple of weeks. We have to give you an update here on the Twitter breach because this got a whole lot worse. A massive Twitter breach that happened last year, exposing more than 5 million Twitter user phone numbers and email addresses, was way worse than initially reported. There's new evidence that the same security vulnerability was exploited by multiple bad actors and that hacked data had been offered for sale on the dark web by several different sources, meaning they had a vulnerability so flipping bad that essentially multiple threat actors were able to get in, make a copy of the data. They didn't have to get it, from somebody else. They went right to Twitter. That is a huge security vulnerability. And the Twitters and the Facebooks of the world are constantly being targeted for these things. So it's kind of unconscionable that something like that would happen. And finally, and this is the very last one that we've got for you, we need to talk about WhatsApp. And I have been saying this forever. WhatsApp is not nearly as secure as Facebook has traditionally heavily touted. Facebook, obviously now called Meta, for, you know, going down the drain purposes. And they have gone down the drain. You check out that stock price. Lordy, Lord. Now, here's what's going on. And as reported by Cyber News, someone is selling a 2022 database of 487 million WhatsApp mobile numbers. This includes accounts from 84 countries, such as the United States, United Kingdom, Russia, Egypt, and a ton others. 32 million are from the US, 11 million from the UK, and on and on and on. WhatsApp has around 2 billion monthly active users worldwide, and this leak just puts nearly half a billion of their users at risk. Cyber News also pointed out that the leaked accounts belong to active WhatsApp users. So if you're thinking, well, I haven't had a WhatsApp account in 5 years and I'd shut it down, I'm not worried about you. But if you're using WhatsApp right now, you are potentially, at risk here, because that's obviously a huge thing. The seller could have obtained these phone numbers, for the record, using a process known as scraping that basically refers to harvesting information at scale, although that violates WhatsApp's terms of service. And the mere fact that somebody would be able to potentially scrape WhatsApp is all you need to know about the security of that. Remember, this is what Facebook calls hyper-secure end-to-end. No one can read, and on and on and on. And we'll talk about that in a second here. Now, the seller also revealed that they're selling this database for $7,000 US. This kind of information that was leaked in this case, phone numbers of WhatsApp users, is usually used for things like phishing attacks or fraud, to send out spam, those kinds of things. So if you're an active WhatsApp user, beware of unknown numbers trying to message you or call you on the platform. And like I said, Facebook has touted this as, it's end-to-end encryption. Nobody can read. Nobody, zero people, anything can read the message you send or receive except you, the sender, and your recipient, and vice versa. That is it. And we have found that Facebook has integrated AI to read these things. They've got third-party contractors that are reading Facebook WhatsApp messages, and on and on and on. It is a complete mess. If you think WhatsApp is secure, it absolutely is not. This really proves it. So heads up to you, almost 500 million, a quarter of the entire WhatsApp community around the globe. You may be caught up in this. That's a huge problem. So be on the lookout for phishing and understand WhatsApp is not nearly as secure as you think. And those were your breaches of the week. Crazy, crazy couple of weeks, even with the holiday break here in the United States. Were you affected? Let me know.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And our deep dive of the week actually is on China. China's experiencing the largest, most widespread violent protest they've seen since Tiananmen Square in the late 1980s. But one of the things that we're going to talk about, obviously outside of China, is the culpability, interestingly enough, of the West. And hear me out here on this, because while China owns a lot of this, they don't own everything. And I think this is kind of important. And so let's go through this, because as I mentioned, this is the largest protest we've seen since Tiananmen Square. People are talking revolution, all of this. And while this apparently was sparked by harsh COVID lockdowns, and we're going to talk about that, I think this was a long time coming. So think about this: surveillance state, forced labor, censorship, not to mention human rights violations against minority groups like the Uyghurs. This all adds up inside China to rage and just a desire to be free from all of this. If you're under surveillance and censored 24/7, working for low wages or slave wages, this is a huge problem. And so we're seeing violent clashes with Chinese authorities now in multiple cities. Citizens have been publicly calling for the removal of President Xi, even though that kind of speech is banned. If you didn't know, you are not allowed to go on Chinese social media or walk out into the street and say, you know, President Xi looks like Winnie the Pooh. That's actually a thing that's banned. Or President Xi needs to go, or we should kill President Xi, or whatever it is. All of those things are illegal. Now, with all of this going on, it's important to understand that the Chinese government bears the most responsibility here. Like I said, their policies and actions have directly led to riots and protests in what is the largest, most populous country in the world. Or I should say most populous, not by land, but by population by far. But as I said, we have to be honest here. The rest of the world has to own some of this too. And please, please, please hear me out. Now, we love our technology, and most of this is cheaply produced in China's low-wage to slave-wage factories by their slave-wage to low-wage labor force. There's no doubt about this, and there's other manufacturing areas, but China by far has been the hugest, but the largest, ever since the 1970s when they really had this push. So when this all started melting down, it seems somewhat fitting that Apple, yes, Apple, maker of the iPhone, would be at the heart of this, and here's how. This is where the violence basically sparked into what some people are calling a possible revolution in China. This is where it started. Hundreds of workers at Apple's main iPhone making plant in China clashed with security personnel as tensions boiled over after almost a month under tough restrictions intended to basically quash a COVID outbreak. Workers at the Foxconn Technology Group plant streamed out of dormitories in the early hours of Wednesday, November 23rd, jostling and pushing past the white-clad guards that they vastly outnumbered, according to a multitude of videos sent by a witness that basically witnessed portions of these protests. I have seen these videos. It is unbelievable to watch. Now, several white-suited people pummeled a person lying on the ground with sticks, and in one of the clips, onlookers yelled, "Fight, fight, fight," as throngs of people forced their way past these barricades. And you can watch the videos. They're tearing down fences and barricades and everything. It's just completely overwhelmed. At one point, several surrounded an occupied police car. They began rocking the vehicle, screaming incoherently, all these kinds of things. And the protests started overnight over unpaid wages and fears of spreading infection, according to the witnesses that obviously asked to remain anonymous, speaking to news sources outside of China. Several workers were injured. Anti-riot police arrived on the scene that Wednesday to restore order, and on and on and on. Now, this campus, located in Shenzhou in the middle of China, was reportedly operating normally as of Wednesday evening, according to Foxconn, though we now believe that's not true, given the state of China at the moment. So at this time, at that time, this was a rare instance of violence at the plant in the central city of Shenzhou, and it reflects a buildup of those tensions since the lockdowns began in October. Many of the vast workforce of the more than 200,000 workers at what is known as iPhone City have been plunged into isolation. They were forced to subsist on Spartan meals, scrounge for medication, and on and on. Many of them eventually fled the plant on foot in October as well. It also underscores how Xi Jinping's COVID zero policy, which relies on swift lockdowns to stamp out the disease whenever it pops up, is increasingly weighing on the Chinese economy and throwing swaths of the global supply chain into disarray. Meaning if they lock these people down, you can't work, or you can't essentially have product leave the factories. We have slowdowns in this. Like I said, they are the largest manufacturing base by far in the entire world, and they are manufacturing our products. Beijing recently issued new directives ordering officials to minimize disruption and use more targeted COVID controls, but surging outbreaks in major cities have forced local authorities to reach for stricter curbing again. And so, to be fair to Apple, most big tech companies have this problem. It's not like Androids or laptops, you know, or other tech production gets a free pass here. Many of them use Foxconn or Foxconn competitors, all based out of China. This underscores basically the larger symptoms that we have. Foxconn is used, as I said, by many big tech companies. They have plants all over the world, usually in low-income areas where governments are known to bend rules or turn a blind eye to workers' rights. So we are talking about Southeast Asia. Foxconn has plants in Brazil. They were talking about spinning up a plant here in the United States in Wisconsin, just over the border of Illinois by Chicago and Milwaukee. That never really came to fruition, so that's obviously a huge thing. Apple, though, and let's go back to Apple, in their past, thanks to their third-party suppliers, have been found to have child labor and also what is tantamount to slave labor in their supply chain. So, for example, if you remember, it was Foxconn iPhone plants in China whose buildings had to actually put netting up because the workers were so unhappy, depressed, whatever. They were literally experiencing suicidal tendencies, and they had multiple people throw themselves out of windows high up in the plant and kill themselves. So basically, they put up netting to catch the people falling so that they could bring them back into the building and, I assume, put them back to work as opposed to give them a week off and some mental health here. Now, as of Sunday through Monday, we're talking November 27th and 28th, the Chinese government still hasn't gotten this under control, and multiple cities are now experiencing this. I'm sitting here in my initial broadcast Monday, November 28th. This is still going on. I'm still watching this and tracking these things for work. Now, aside from physical altercations with protesters to try and reestablish dominance, the Chinese government has been rather busy online. This is the other elements of this. Now, as we here, for my day job, track the current situation in China and their government's efforts to quell information online, it's actually been interesting to see legions of quiet or dormant Chinese language accounts on Twitter and other Western and Asian platforms outside of China simply come to life and start flooding the ecosystems, like Twitter, for example, with adult content while tagging the names of cities currently experiencing protests and violence. Basically, they're making it harder to find news and actual information about the situation. So think about it this way. You're on Twitter and you want to figure out, oh, there's riots in Shenzhou or Beijing or Henan or wherever they are. And you go ahead and you pop that in there and you're a Chinese speaker. You're just trying to figure out what's happening, you know, with your family or your home city and you're outside of China. Now, what you're getting flooded with are things like advertisements for escort services or pornography or those kinds of things, tagging your city into it. The goal there is to trip up the AIs, the algorithms that run the Twitters and Facebooks of the world, to start prioritizing other traffic. Meaning, if the AI says, oh, wow, well, everybody's talking about escort services in Beijing, all of a sudden, that must be a really hot topic. So when somebody searches on Beijing, I'm going to give them all of those really hotly used results about escort services as opposed to the actual news. That's what's happening on Twitter right now. As I personally went through and started looking at these, switching my language, and connecting to Twitter as a foreigner, meaning routing my connection, through Vietnam or another country around China, I start to see, as I'm searching for any city, nothing but escort ads itself. Now, here's the problem, though, especially with Twitter's case. They're at reduced staff at the moment. If you remember, Elon Musk fired 3,700 plus employees. That was half their staff. They lost legions of people, including top executives, all of those kinds of things. So I'm wondering if they're actually going to be able to combat this in some way, shape, or form. It's possible that, like Tiananmen Square, the military will be brought in and quell the rioters and establish order. So we may see this end quickly or expand to overwhelm even the military, though I don't want to think about that death toll, to be perfectly honest, because for civilians, especially unarmed, compared to a military that is heavily armed with firearms and tanks and all those kinds of things, it is a lot of bodies that have to die before the military gets overrun. But either way, by the time you may be listening to this, my show here on the radio, the violence may have subsided in China, but that doesn't mean that China doesn't have ongoing problems. Now, think about this. Outside of their COVID zero policy lockdown and all of their other internal policies, we really have to ask ourselves here in the West, basically, as we own a part of this by using the Foxconns of the world, you know, meaning that Apple or that HP laptop is being basically, manufactured in these plants that are melting down, that are using forced and slave labor. We have to ask ourselves, how do we fix our aspects of this? The easy answer seems to be more regulation on these companies. It really does. That Foxconn plant was supposed to be built and online. This is the one in Wisconsin. It was supposed to be built and online during the Trump administration, and it never really came online, even as we're sitting here at the next administration, the Biden administration. You know, if it was, there could be a local workforce in, southern Wisconsin, northern Illinois, that could be earning living wages and working proper hours manufacturing iPhones or whatever it is Foxconn would manufacture there. But that's not going to happen anytime soon. And if you're wondering why, it's simply this. We love our technology to be both cheap and disposable. That $1,500 iPhone, which is already expensive, would be like $2,000 or $3,000 and people would balk. And that's essentially what we're talking about here. If you've got somebody that's working an 8-hour shift, making wages because they're being protected by a labor union, that is, you know, that person is making $50 an hour or whatever it would be. Whatever they can get. And when you're looking at the person in China that's making $1 an hour or less, or $3 an hour, that is nothing. That keeps the price lower. And so, until, you know, basically that happens, that we start regulating those things, Apple and others are going to continue to make their phones and computers using these low wage or slave wage, poorly treated workforces in China, India, Brazil, you know, you name it. We can't escape this right now. I'm literally recording this on tech that is being built and manufactured in China or any one of those places by that same low-wage, slave-wage workforce. You are watching this or listening to this, you know, and probably not watching this since it's a radio show, but you are listening to this essentially in the same boat. You might be streaming me on an app on your iPhone right now. You know, you might be driving around in your car listening to this on, you know, whatever local affiliate you happen to catch my radio show on. And here we are. That head unit, that radio in your car, was that manufactured here in the United States? Absolutely not.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A ESP. Again, that's Nick A ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.